are listening to FBC Perspective, a podcast from First Baptist Church, Kelowna.
Hello from First Baptist Church in Kelowna. This is Pastor Kevin Green. I'm your host. And I'd like to welcome you to our Perspective podcast, where we talk about things that help us live better lives. Today, I'm talking to Rob Ogilvie with the CBWC, which is the Canadian Baptist of Western Canada. And Rob is our executive minister. Rob, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Kevin. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, really important question first. Why in the world would you consider moving from Vancouver to Calgary? We don't understand that.
Most people don't. Well, I shouldn't say most people don't. Anybody who's a grandparent understands. We just had our first grandchild about almost four months ago now. And that seems to be the greatest attraction there. So that would be our primary reason, our family members that are going to be there. And so we're going to head back to Calgary, where we once lived for 10 years, many, many years ago. So in some ways, it's like going home.
Well, our listeners can't see you, but I'm going to say that you sure don't look old enough to be a grandparent. So congratulations.
Well, thanks for that. Yes, we were 12 when we got married. So,
Okay. Well, we're going to have to do a truth check in this after this episode here. Rob, you are the executive minister of the CBWC. What does that mean, and what keeps you busy nowadays?
Executive minister. Yeah, it's a strange title, I think, for a lot of people to try to grasp and understand. Maybe the most helpful way to explain it is my understanding of what the denomination and the role of the denomination is. First of all, is that our role is to really help local churches flourish in the ministry that God's called them to at this time in their location. So in a sense, the role of the denomination is to support the local church. So myself, in my role as executive minister, is I have a whole team of people that I have that really are the ones who are connecting with the local churches and the pastors and the leaders of those local churches. And then I also, though, so I work with that team, but I also work with partner ministries that we have that are in Western Canada, but some are right across Canada, and others are around the world, including the Baptist World Alliance. And I guess the other things I'd say for myself, in my role, it's big picture, it's vision, who we are as a body, and try to help us manage that when you have 165 autonomous or independent churches in many ways that are all a part of this one organization. And then there's the practical stuff, the money, you know, finances, staffing, and all the pieces that go along with that as well.
Rob, given that you have 165 churches to think about and an executive staff, what does a normal day look like for you?
Oh man, a normal day really varies. I guess in some ways it's kind of like there was pre-COVID normal and during COVID normal. My normal day now during COVID really is spending much of the time in my home office. Prior to that, it was very much there's a great deal of travel that's involved and going out and meeting with partners and such and connecting with our churches to a certain degree as well. It's quite different in a lot of ways, but sometimes it's just a matter of plowing through the 70 or so emails in a given day. And other times it's spent meetings with our staff and doing some planning and organizing. And I also sit on a couple of different boards. And so that, you know, there's just all kinds of differentness, I guess. And normal is a difficult word to define.
Right. So it sounds like you have a huge, diverse job description.
Yeah, absolutely. Very much.
Hey, you know, we live, and I'm sure you know this, but we live in really interesting times. And it seems like there is less and less of a draw or impulse to affiliation and maybe a move towards independence. And at the local church level, many of our churches, and mine included, are made up of people from very diverse backgrounds. I mean, I've got a collection of Anglicans, Pentecostals, Lutherans, Mennonites, and even Catholics present in our Baptist church. And I don't think we are that unique. I think it's pretty common. And some people, if not many in our churches, may not even care that much about denominational labels. So Rob, given this reality and this diversity, how does this affect our identity as Baptists?
It's a great question. You know, you're right. Our churches are filled with people from all different traditions. I remember 12 years ago, I started as the regional minister for British Columbia and the Yukon with the Canadian Baptists of Western Canada. And that first year, as I went to each church for the very first time in the, across the BC region, and that, there was about 60 churches, I swear every church I went into, somebody would come up to me and they would say, you know, we're not a typical Baptist church.
Right.
And it just seemed crazy to me that after a while I came to the point of saying, I have no idea what a typical Baptist church is.
You know? Right.
And so, yeah, on the one hand, we can go back and historically look at Baptist distinctives, core values, those types of pieces, but they are being not challenged necessarily, but just we're encouraged to think maybe even more broadly now than what a typical Baptist church would have been at one point in time. And there's a richness in that, but there is also the challenge. There's a fair bit of work that comes with that in trying to allow different voices to be heard, and then at the same time to have enough of a united voice to move forward together.
Can you tell us a bit about that challenge for leadership, given that diversity?
Yeah, it's I think I said earlier there's 165 churches, you know, yeah. And if you think like you just described of your own church, Kev, you've got people from all different types of backgrounds. So you take that and you multiply that out by 165. Plus we have churches that that are new Canadian churches. And so they hold their services in languages other than English. And we have about 15 different languages of services. Wow. That are happening in CBWC churches. And so each one of those churches, as they bring their historical understanding of what it means to be a Baptist church as well, just adds more and more complexity, if you will. This isn't me complaining, actually, because I think there's a lot that we can learn from one another. But it does mean that when we come together, when we gather together to have a conversation around challenging issues, or issues maybe that are, some of them are cultural, societal issues, some challenges that we're working through, there are just that many more voices to be heard and listened to and try to be included in the conversation.
Yeah, I know I'm a big fan of diversity, but I think it's like a double-edged sword. Diversity actually can be our greatest strength, but it could also be our greatest weakness. And it's one of those things where we need to learn how to leverage diversity, isn't it?
Yeah, it truly is. It truly is. Because there's a lot of richness that we learn from other people and other cultures. And we have to be open-minded enough to be able to allow that to come in. But it does mean that our world will be changed.
Yeah.
Our world will be rocked, right?
Right.
And so it's important. We can't just have the perspective that as new people come into Canada, they just have to adapt to who we are and that's it.
Right.
You know, we have to be able to say, we as a body who are here, and I'm speaking as a middle-aged white Anglo-Saxon Protestant guy. So, and I don't understand a lot of the ethnic challenges that many other individuals have gone through. And but it's important for me to stop and to listen and
yeah.
to understand and to do the best that I can to understand so that their voices are a part of things. And it's not that we have just all these different churches as a part of the CBWC, but that we have that we can come together in a united way and still proclaim Christ as a united body.
Yeah. Yeah. And with that, I mean, we might call it, or might not want to call it white privilege, but, there is this idea that a lot of us are used to seeing newcomers as the other and ourselves as the main people. And it's a bit of a challenge. And I think, Rob, we're seeing a lot of unrest in the world around issues like that. And closer to home, there's social and racial tension. I'm especially thinking about the police killing of George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter movement. So I just want to ask you, what's our denomination's encouragement and direction towards racial violence and social unrest. What do you think we should be doing?
Yeah. Well, this is where I can always get myself in trouble, because when you ask a question, what's the denomination's position? When I speak, people believe I'm speaking as the denomination, which, like I said, 165 autonomous churches, nobody ever likes it when somebody else speaks on their behalf. But let me at least say this. I've been deeply saddened by what I've seen in the media the last week to week and a half. It's obvious, and the police action in firing and now charging the police officer who knelt on the neck of that poor man and took his life. It is obvious that what he was doing was absolutely wrong and criminal.
Yeah.
And we have to stand up.
Yeah.
And we have to protest. And I very much support people being out and protesting. Again, speaking as a Caucasian male, do I really understand the unrest that the African American people talk about from the last 400 years that they have gone through? No, I do not. Mm. But I do believe, I do know that in the 56 years that I've been alive, for at least from my younger years as I can think back, I can think of many examples of this exact same situation where a black man has been taken down by a white police officer, and it has caused all kinds of riots, and there is racial tension that is there. You know, I think where we really have a hard time is when it comes to the rioting.
Yeah.
I think all of us, well, and again, it's dangerous to say all of us, but I very much support the protests. I very much support people going out and trying to help us to understand that Black Lives Matter, and, you know, and it's very important that those messages are proclaimed. When it comes to the unrest of the looting, you know, the damage and the looting and such like that, it's very difficult for those of us who have never felt that level of oppression to understand why people would go there. But yeah. I think it's important that we try to understand.
Yeah.
You know, if we just sit back and condemn, we're not going to help this. We need to be able to try to understand what drives someone to that extreme level. And then from there, we need to see how it is that we can walk with them. And
yeah, I appreciate what you're saying, because it's kind of like, you know, when someone's grieving, condemning is like telling them how they should grieve. While we're not maybe fans of violence and destruction, I mean, people are grieving and they're expressing it. So it's hard for us to condemn that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to see the amount of force that's coming out as well is just causing greater unrest, isn't it?
So Rob, given that we are very diverse, and you said there were 165 churches that are probably diverse in their congregations, but diverse as bodies as well, do you think we can speak with a unified voice on issues like this? Is there a place for that?
I do think there's a place for that. Some people, maybe this might deflect slightly from what you're just asking me, but you know, when it comes to denominationalism, is there any point in denominations? And I think that denominations still play a huge role. When I was serving as a regional minister, I had phone calls from pastors from independent churches at times. They would call me and they would ask me for help, because they didn't have anybody to turn to. They didn't have anybody that they could just talk to. And in a denominational churches, there's always someone that you can talk to and turn to from your local church in order to ask for help and guidance and direction and that sort of thing. It's not that we'll tell you what to do, but so you've always got a team. You have a team that's prepared to walk with you and support you in a variety of different ways. And so we have these other bodies, you know, the North American Baptist Fellowship that we work alongside, and then the Baptist World Alliance. And when you do bring all of those groups together, they can have a powerful voice.
Yeah.
There can be enough people involved and engaged in that voice that those that are in government, those that are in positions of authority, actually do need to stop and listen to. And so there is some benefit in that, in being able to work together in the wider group as well.
And Rob, we have other issues to deal with too as a denomination. We have reconciliation issues, and maybe they're less acute, but they're more chronic and just as important. And I'm thinking specifically of our Indigenous population. And I'm wondering what's our heart for that as a denomination, and what role does the denomination have in leading churches in this?
Yeah, it's a great question as well. The denomination, and when I say that, I speak of the assembly of people who gathered together, signed the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Persons. And so in doing that, we're trying to say, we recognize that there is a need for us as bodies to be working together and walking with First Nations people. And the challenge in some ways from the denomination side is that it has to happen at the local church level. It's the local churches that are connected and engaged with the local Indigenous peoples in their communities. And so at the denomination level, we want to be supportive of the churches that are doing that, help to resource and help to facilitate for them. But at the same time, the local church, it needs to be the one who's truly engaging with the people on the ground. And that's where the real difference will happen, I think.
So Rob, changing gears a little bit here, but this is in the air, so to speak, this whole COVID-19 situation. I wonder if you could tell us how our local churches are doing and coping with this.
Oh, yeah. Well, and as you know, suddenly within a matter of a few days, everybody had to shut the doors of their church buildings and go online, right?
Right.
And so we have churches that use Zoom, they use YouTube, they use Facebook Live. And the vast majority of our churches have gone to some sort of an online service on Sundays. And I've actually been really impressed with how quickly they adapted. For some, the first couple of weeks were a little shaky technologically, you know.
Yeah.
But I remember I put out a brief newsletter at the beginning, and I said, turn your tech geeks loose. You know, this is a time for the people, you know, you probably didn't take a course in seminary on technology, you know, but this is a time to really let those technical people shine and help you in doing that. And our churches have been doing it. And I think it's really cool. And there's been all kinds of new and creative ministries that have come out of this time that this time has forced in many ways, including your podcast, right? That it's an initiative that started since COVID began.
So Rob, given all that, what changes and adjustments have been positive and do you think will be lasting that we'll keep doing after all of this is over?
Yeah. You know what? And this won't be over for a while.
Right.
And so we do have to keep doing this. I was on a phone conversation last week with the Premier of British Columbia, the Minister of Health, and Dr. Bonnie Henry, who is our medical health officer, Chief Medical Health Officer. And on that phone conversation, she said that we will not be going past 50 people, gatherings of 50 people, until the end of the next flu season is over.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was able to get a question in there just to clarify that with her, because when she first said it, I thought that can't be.
Right.
But I got a question in, asked again, and she said, yes, unless there's some sort of a vaccine, her expectation is that we won't be having groups of more than 50 gathering until next April or May.
Yeah.
Now when you let that sink in, you suddenly realize how dramatic that is for our congregations. Because I think it'd be fair to say a lot of people were expecting by September they'd be back into some sort of a normal routine, right?
Right, right.
And so we are going to have to continue to take these changes. As I've been thinking a little bit about the next few months, I think our churches, they might be able to invite some people to come for a service, but it's going to have to be a both and. We're still going to need to do online presence and still have smaller gatherings. I hope our churches will embrace the summer months and really allow small groups to gather outdoors and really have great ministry opportunities together in the great outdoors, because, you know, as they say, you're allowed, or the transmission of the virus isn't as bad when you're outside. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that our churches will think creatively about what ministry looks like outdoors while we have the nice weather. And then as we move into the fall and the tougher weather, I think we're still going to need that online presence. And it might be, though, that churches, in some ways, they decide to do multiple services. You know,
right.
You could do a Saturday night, you could do two Sunday mornings, something like that. The bigger challenge, though, on that is that along with a maximum of 50, there's a lot of restrictions still about no singing, no food, no coffee, no greeting one another as far as, you know, shaking hands or hugging or anything like that. In some ways, I was thinking about this and I thought all of the sort of personal relational side of a church service.
Yeah, you know, I was nodding along with that until you said no coffee. And then I thought, well, surely that's not right.
Sorry, you can bring your own. You can bring your own. But you're not supposed to be, you know, you're not supposed to be serving stuff there that would have multiple contacts of hands, you know.
Yeah, of course.
So maybe if you have a coffee maker, individuals can go up and fill their own. Maybe something mm-hmm. like that. Maybe I misspoke on that. I didn't want to scare you about the coffee.
Well, it is very alarming. No coffee.
It is. Yeah, but so this changes, you know, who we are as a people, because when we gather, we greet and we visit over food and such, and the no singing, you know, is the other piece that really I think is always an important part of our services as well.
Yeah, and of course, the singing has been identified as one of the easiest ways of transmitting the virus, hasn't it?
It has. Yeah. And Dr. Henry gave us a couple of examples on that call last week. She actually told us about a church in Frankfurt, Germany that it just happened last week that had 150 people who gathered in it, like as they've been reopening. They had 150 people gather, and about a week later, there was 104 of them had COVID.
Wow.
And they were supposedly practicing social distancing, she said.
Yeah.
So, wow. You know, so it's not something we can just ignore and pretend like it's gone. We have to take it seriously. You know, we've had churches who have done outdoor services. We've had churches that are doing online marriage courses. We've had pastors do altar calls at the end of their service on an online setting and had people give their life to Christ. Like I'm struck and amazed by the number of things that our churches have done creatively in order to, you know, to embrace where we are right now. And I think you're right. Some of those things will stick afterwards as well. Mm. And, but in the meantime, I think we're in it for a long haul, longer than a lot of us thought we were going to be.
Rob, we've talked about lots of kind of heavy things. And I wonder if you could tell us about something in our denomination that's making you happy, that's bringing you lots of encouragement.
Well, yeah, glad to. I think there's a couple of things. One is the way the churches have adapted during COVID. You know, it's to me, it is just a real positive thing to see how people have been able to change so quickly, you know, to embrace this new reality. And there's lots of churches who have talked about doing online stuff for years, but have never got around to it. Within a matter of a week, they had to, you know. And so, that, you know, that part is encouraging for me. Another piece I would say is we're in the process of beginning a gap year program, and it's called Kurios. And that gap year program was to begin in this September, and it's still May. It's still May. We're a little unsure still, but we will make a decision by the end of June, one way or the other, if Kurios is going to happen. But Kurios is a discipleship training program, 7 months for young people who are coming out of high school and who are looking to grow in an understanding of who Jesus is in their life. And it involves travel. There's an international component to Costa Rica, and again, that's part of the uncertainty at the moment. Nobody's traveling anywhere, but it's something that I'm very excited about. In the past, as a denomination, we had a school that ran for 50 years that helped to raise up the next generation of leaders for our denomination. And we haven't had that for the last 20 years. And it's time that we get back to it. And we need to raise up the next generation leaders. So I'm excited about it. I'm a little on, you know, on the fence in the sense is it going to happen or not? But when it does happen, for sure, it will be very exciting and meaningful.
Well, Rob, what's something you love about your job besides, because I know you'll say being interviewed for podcasts is number one, but besides that, what's something you love about your job?
Wow. Kevin Green's podcast. Absolutely. is the number one thing. Yes. Yes. You know what? I think the greatest joy I have is the team of people that I get to work with. We have an executive staff team, and then we have strong administrative team who are around us as well. And, you know, this is the type of role that you don't want to be a lone ranger in. You need to be able to work with a team. And we have a team that really works well together. There's a high level of trust. We listen to each other and we seek just to understand what God's saying to us as a group and what God's saying to the broader denominational group and attempt to listen to them. And so it's a real privilege for me to be able to work with my team. I'm grateful for them.
Well, Rob, it has been a privilege to talk to you, and I thank you so much for taking time to speak with us today.
Hey, it's been my privilege to be here. Kevin Green, like the last time I was in your audio room, because I know that audio is a cool thing for you, was watching Lord of the Rings, part 3, I believe it was, you know, in your home. And so it's really a privilege for me to be able to be with you. And so thank you for inviting
time for
me.
A repeat.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be great.
So, hey, thank you for listening. And I hope that you feel better equipped to deal with life than you did before. It's been great to talk about things that help us live better lives. And I look forward to connecting with you on our next podcast. Until next time, keep the faith and live in hope.
Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe so that you can catch all our future episodes. You can search for us as FBC Perspective on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.